Chapter 16. Asher Gordo, I deadpanned, as the image of the bald, vulture-like man with the beaky, hooded nose popped into my head, and I grimaced as if I'd just licked something bitter like hot asphalt. Ryland sank down a little lower in his seat and continued to fiddle with weaving his hive, and I frowned when I remembered the last interaction I had with the unpleasant duelist and his wife, Vel Rala, a woman who resembled a white cockatoo with a sour attitude. It was right after Lord Mech's Blue Night Gala when Zoe and I came upon our favorite stable boy right in the middle of an altercation between the two cruel socialites. At the time, Rylan had just defended Zoe's honor from Vel Rala's vicious slander by dumping wine all over her and ruining her dress. The cockatoo woman was enraged and tried to make the kid pay by getting her single-ranked Asher husband to duel him. It would have been a slaughter had Zoe and I not intervened. "I thought I made it clear to that fucker we were through," I said, as my eyebrows lowered into a thunderous scowl.
"It must not have been clear enough, because he is refusing to leave without an audience, and he even has a signed writ from the magistrate of Gatetown, Gellivane,"
the koala butler said as he wrung his furry paws. "You're going to have to explain that one," I said, as I pinched the bridge of my nose. "What is this writ about?"
"In some circumstances, a duelist can bring a document verified by a member of the Asher Council that changes or adds stipulations to the duel,"
he explained, and tweaked his monocle as he was about to enter professor mode.
"Typically, in a standard duel, there are only a few basic parameters. One, the challenger must be lower ranked than the challenged, or the challenger must justify evoking the right against a lower rank due to a grievous offense witnessed by a non-biased party."
"Right. Kind of like how I got tied up with Dagmar when I insulted his honor in front of the whole village square. That's why he could challenge a no rank like me." I glanced at Zoe when I said this, and I knew she was remembering our first encounter, too. That day was probably the best and worst day of my admittedly short life, but I didn't regret one iota of the events that played out the day I arrived mysteriously in Aventol.
"Exactly,"
the koala man said, and then continued his lecture.
"The second parameter is the one being challenged may choose the weapon in which the duel will be fought, and the third and final parameter is whoever wins gets all of the other's property and assets to do with as they see fit."
"Simple," I said, even though it really wasn't.
"But in some cases, like in circumstances where there is a lack of a witness to verify an offense, or where a challenger duelist wants some of his assets distributed to business partners in case he dies, or a myriad of other specific miscellany that both parties can agree on before the duel commences, a duelist can get the top Asher in his city to mock up a writ that passes out the shades of gray lying between the three basic parameters."
"So, like a business contract," I guessed. "Like a, hey, I want to murder you, but just in case you get me first, this is what I'd like you to do with my stuff," sort of deal. "Or like a, your face offends me, but the only one who agrees was squished by a Porax hind end, but trust me, I was offended," type of thing. Horace jokingly threw his 2 cents into the mix, and I shot him an amused grin.
"Yes, either of those could be written in the, writ,"
Jenner said, and tugged the cuffs of his tattered brown jacket in his typical fidgety manner when he was anxious about something. "By that logic, what's to stop anyone from dueling anybody for bogus reasons as long as they have a magic paper?" I asked, and I was more than a little outraged. It wasn't like the three basic parameters of the duel were perfect, but when things started sounding semantical and people wanted to start splitting hairs, well, it became a little too political for my tastes.
"You are correct. It is a little more involved than that, and most Asher lords reject the proposals of a writ because it's too much to bother with,"
the koala man said with a nod of his fluffy-eared head.
"But occasionally it does happen."
"Like now," I said with a gusty sigh. "So, what is the protocol for this?"
"Typically, the challenged will discuss the new duel parameters with the challenger on his home turf over an amicable meal,"
Jenner said, as if by rote. "I am not having that waste of space inside for tea," I spat. "Honestly,
No, no. Just outside the gates of the manor should suffice,
he backtracked, but then he firmed his jaw.
But you will need someone there to verify the writ and to bear witness of your agreement.
And if I don't agree? I asked through clenched teeth, and both my wives put a supportive hand on me for comfort, Zoe's on my shoulder, and Shay with her hand clutching my wrist from across the table.
Then the duelist right is either revoked by the challenger, or the challenger can decide to go through with the duel with the basic parameters in place,
Jenner said.
But you must duel for as long as the challenger has evoked his right.
This is ridiculous, I grumbled, and then let out another aggravated sigh. Why can't people just leave me alone?
I did warn you about your coveted status, husband,
Zoe said, and she set aside her partially made hive so she could stand up.
Let's go see what that disgrace wants.
I say we all meet Gordo at the gates just to up the intimidation factor,
Shay said, and I blinked in surprise at how ruthless her usually sweet voice sounded.
I have no love lost for Gordo and his meddlesome wife, in case you were wondering.
I was, actually, but you all don't have to go with me. Jenner said I only needed one witness to make sure the writ was... whatever. I then took Zoe's offered hand so she could pull me to my feet. Nonsense, Horace declared, and stood up as well. We're all going.
Yeah!
Ryland said, even though I knew he was probably still afraid of the Asher who kicked the pulp out of him and threatened to kill him.
We're going with you!
See, the Falcon Man said, and leaned his arm atop the stable boy's head. You're stuck with us. Deal with it. Arvid, you want to come too? I asked, as the Sloth Man rose slowly to his feet.
Yes,
he droned and nodded his woolly head. All right, let's go see what the cat dragged in, I muttered, before I led my miniature entourage out of the kitchen, back through the manor, and then down to the carriage house where the front gate was.
What's going on?
Bowden asked, as we passed the Raccoon Brothers on their way in from taking the rest of the ashroot vines to the mill.
Someone has come to challenge Alex to a duel!
Rylan helpfully filled them in.
And we're going with him to try and make that nasty Gordo too scared to even shake his dick at his own shadow!
Whatever that was supposed to mean. Okay, take it easy, Tiger, I laughed, and wondered if I should really try to do the parental thing and tell him to watch his mouth, but it was just too funny to see him all riled up. It was like he was a pissed-off chihuahua gearing up to take on a Rottweiler.
Well, count us in, Mel grunted, as he swung a spiky garden trowel over his shoulders, and his brother merely nodded his agreement as they followed us with determined strides.
It was humbling how all of them wanted to show me their support in the face of this unwelcome visitor, and even though I never doubted my ability to handle any obstacle, it was nice to have so much support in my corner. When we all finally made it outside the gates, I could see the bald Asher also brought his own traveling band of merry fuckfaces who were all mounted on formidable-looking canterflies. And as we approached, the Vulture Man grinned his thin, greasy grin and hopped down from his saddle.
Oh, what's this?
He asked in his unctuous tones as his black beetle eyes scanned all the people rallying behind me.
A whole welcoming committee just for me?
You are not welcome, Gordo, or didn't I make myself clear the last time we spoke? I said bluntly as I took a step toward him with my arms crossed over my chest. The ugly man flinched ever so slightly at the action, and I smirked inwardly.
I remember our last encounter didn't go as well as I would have hoped.
The man's beady eyes glinted as he cut his steely gaze to Rylan.
I see you still have the little scat slinger under your roof. He seems lame, though. It's a wonder you haven't taken him out back and put the whelp out of his misery. When I win our pending duel, I might just do it anyway. If he's too damaged, not even the traitors will take him.
Zoe hissed and growled low in her throat at this, given how she had too much experience with being sent to the traitors. She never spoke much about her time with them, but the little she did say was haunting enough for me to know it was not a good place at all. The stable boy must have known this, too, because he quailed and shuffled meekly behind me, and at the sight of his vulnerable and frightened expression, something snapped. And suddenly, Horace had to hold me back as my vision bled red with rage.
Don't you ever talk that way about him, or you'll get to experience what your ass tastes like when I shove your head up where even the demon sun won't shine, I growled, and Horace strengthened his grip to keep me from ripping out the fucker's throat. Such a reaction! The vulture man threw his head back and laughed a cruel laugh.
That should make this even more interesting.
Mr. Alex, although I understand the sentiment, you simply must wait to kill him until he evokes the rite officially,
Jenner said out of the corner of his mouth, and I stopped trying to escape the Falcon Man's grip. I took a steadying breath as the Koala Man's words pierced through the thick veil of hatred cluttering up my mind with its need to avenge, destroy, and annihilate the bastard off the face of the planet. It was difficult, but I managed to regain a little more of my previous composure.
State your business, Gordo, I said through gritted teeth.
What? No wine or offers of hospitality?
The balderdasher teased, and then he snapped his fingers for one of his three accompanied men to bring him an official-looking document folded into thirds. With his long, bony fingers, he then opened what I assumed was the writ Jenner was going on about, and I narrowed my eyes suspiciously at the paper held in his creepy skeletal hands.
"Do you know what this is, Archer Brightwood?"
"Enlighten me," I spat.
"In summation, it says, the infraction committed against my wife, Blue Knight Lost, perpetrated by your little scourge mite, justifies my outrage, and gives me rights to regain my house's lost honor through your cleansing rite of the duel, regardless of the boy's no-rank status."
The vulture man's thin lips curled even more as if he was building up steam.
"And because you waltzed in and destroyed my chance at honor..."
"You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means," I couldn't help but mutter.
"You must duel me,"
he finished with a clenched jaw, and I felt a spike of satisfaction that I bombed his no doubt specially rehearsed honor speech with a quote from Inigo Montoya. "You went through all the trouble of getting a fancy paper just to tell me that?" I asked with an unimpressed eyebrow arched toward my hairline.
"No!"
he said with a glare that would probably be intimidating if it wasn't on his ugly, big-nosed face.
"I got this writ to prove to you I am a reasonable man, and have added a parameter that would satisfy my honor as well as hopefully preserve any future business relations between us. I know from Dagmar there are illegal tithe pools on your property, and I am willing to keep this quiet if we can agree on a few extra parameters."
"Uh-huh. And what are these bullshit parameters?" I narrowed my gaze when his smarmy, serrated smile grew even more wide and jagged.
"I am willing to forego the duel if you hand over Ryland Dahl," he said,
and I heard the stable boy whimper slightly.
"After all, he is the one who caused the whole ordeal. Why should both of us be brought to fight due to this no rank?"
"That's not an option," I said, and darted a glance over my shoulder to make sure Rylan understood that just as much as this asshole. The stable boy peeked out from where Zoe had pushed him protectively behind her back, and he blinked at me with wide, tear-filled eyes.
"Really, Brightwood, be reasonable," Gordo said,
but it was as if he didn't actually expect to convince me, which was immediately suspicious in my opinion, and I knew there must be more.
"An Asher of your status could buy a whole bushel of stable boys. What's this one to you?"
"He's my son, and if you think I'm handing him over to you, then you must be stupid," I stated bluntly.
"Your son?"
The vulture man threw back his bald head again and let out a series of guffawing laughs that set my teeth on edge.
"And you really think I am the stupid one? As Asher, your status is only maintained through the quality of your assets and possessions. A damaged, mouthy scat kicker like him will only depreciate your estate's value, especially because everyone knows how much of a handful this one can be. Or has he not told you about his origins?"
I frowned and glanced at the kid who was doing his best impression of being invisible. I knew there would have to be a conversation in the future about his clandestine comment, but that could wait. "I don't care where he came from or how much trouble he caused along the way. My declaration still stands. He's my son, and you cannot have him." I crossed my arms over my chest again, and I sensed the avian siblings, Horace and Shay, form stalwart ranks on either side of me. Gordo grinned again as if he expected nothing less. And there it was again, that suspicion growing like a tiger ready to pounce. There was more to this whole dog and pony show, but I didn't know what. Only that he had the confidence of someone who believed he held all the cards. He was up to something big time with his so-called writ and trumped-up, store-bought confidence.
"Very well. It won't matter anyway."
He handed me the writ, which I glanced at and then handed to my trusty koala butler for him to read.
"This brings me to the parameters of our deal. All the basics apply. However, you will follow me to a location of my choice without witnesses."
"That sounds like a terrible idea," I scoffed. "Aren't there supposed to be witnesses to make sure you are at least following the weapons rule? What if I choose hand-to-hand and you pull a sword on me, or try to kill me with poison? That seems to be a popular choice."
"My writ decrees," Gordo started,
but he was swiftly interrupted by Bowden.
"Alex is right. In cases such as this, where the duel is kept out of the public eye, each duelist is allowed to bring a second."
The raccoon man took his cap off and fiddled with it between his lightly clawed hands.
"How do you know this?"
Jenner asked curiously, as he continued to scan the fine print of the document with a weathered eye.
"Just something I know about,"
Bowden shrugged nonchalantly and replaced his cap.
"We could wait to verify it with another magistrate, but that could take a while. And I'm sure you know the consequences if you don't follow the letter of the duelist council law."
The vulture man scowled in the face of Bowden's salient points, and his sucked lemon expression caused me to smirk.
"Sure, Gordy. Why don't you come back later when you have the correct paperwork?"
I couldn't help but jab. All of Gordo's found confidence suddenly flowed down the drain and was replaced with the twitchy, sweaty coward I knew from the stables. He eyed the large hooded man next to him as if waiting for a cue or something, and I suddenly realized Gordo was just a puppet and someone else was really pulling the strings behind this farce.
"Now, it must be today," he growled. "You may choose your second, and I will choose mine. Gotcha!"
The large man Gordo kept nervously glancing at dismounted and threw back the hood obscuring his face. I didn't even know Nazi Milkman was a Halloween costume choice, but the man named Gutter fit the part with his pale blonde hair, cruel blue eyes, and thick arms like tree trunks. However, what really caught my attention was the way Horace sucked in a sharp breath over my shoulder, as if he recognized the large man. Before I could say anything, the Falcon Man grabbed my shoulder.
"Alex, you need to let me be your second."
"Are you sure?" I asked as I turned toward his concerned gold-green gaze.
"What about your wound?"
"I'm sure." He leaned so close he could keep the others from overhearing him.
"Gordo's second, Gutter. I know him. He's a metallurgist like me. There's more I need to tell you, but now is not the time. I just need you to trust me on this."
"Well," the vulture man interrupted impatiently.
"What say you, Brightwood?"
"Give me a second,"
I barked, and then turned my back on him so I could confer with Horace and my two wives.
"This has trap written all over it, you guys. I don't like it."
"Oh, it most definitely is foul,"
Shay agreed, and Zoe scowled deeply as she nodded her head.
"Not even the fishing wharf smell even half as bad."
"You could send him away until he returns with a magistrate, like Bowden said,"
Horace whispered in our little huddle.
"Yeah, but then he'd just be back and I'd have to duel him anyway,"
I said, as the gears in my head whirred and churned.
"He's not even the one I'm concerned about, to be honest."
"What do you mean?"
Zoe asked and cocked her dark head.
"You see how he seems to be taking cues from that big guy Gutter?"
I asked, and watched her sapphire eyes flicker over my head so she could glance at them.
"Gordo was scared shitless of me barely a week ago, and now I'm supposed to believe he scraped together some non-existent courage to reclaim his honor over spilled wine? Fat fucking chance."
"Good point," Horace muttered. "So what do you want to do? You're not seriously thinking about going through with his parameters, are you? He likely has an ambush waiting."
I took a moment to mull this over, because by all rights, Horace was correct. Everyone could tell this was some convoluted attempt to get me out there alone and unaware, and that was never going to happen. But on the other hand, the niggling in the back of my brain reminded me of the time Zoe and I followed Ren and were able to discover the nefarious plot he had cooking and foiled the plan before he had the chance to enact it. That little splinter in my metaphorical side was what held me back from simply telling the Vulture Man to fuck back off where he came from.
You are thinking about going, aren't you?
Zoe said more than asked, as she fixed me with her knowing gaze.
Yes, only because I know the bastard is up to something, and I want to see how it plays out, I said, even though she frowned in disapproval. Don't be mad, babe. You know me. I get that itch, and I gotta go see where it leads.
Your instincts are unparalleled, this is true. I'm going with you.
No, kitten, you can't,
I said gently, since I knew this would not go over well with my fierce warrior wife. Sure enough, her blue eyes snapped like bear traps as she was gearing up to argue with me. But before she could, I headed her off at the pass.
Zoe, I need you here to make sure everyone stays safe. Do you think Rylan would actually stay behind if he saw you go off after me? I don't need the additional worry of him underfoot when I'm trying to take care of Gordo.
Okay, but I'm going to tell Mel and Bowden to track you both after you leave in case you are indeed headed into an ambush,
she said, and flicked one of her ears as if she was flicking away the last of her annoyance.
Good idea. I knew I could count on you, I said, and tweaked her nose just so I could see her hold back her smile. Seriously, though, thank you. I need you here.
I know,
she conceded and caressed my cheek.
Come back and tell us what you learned.
Okay, I will, I said,
and then turned back to Gordo with a determined resolve. I accept your parameters, and I elect Horus as my second. I knew this bastard was up to no good, but I was confident in my abilities to kick his ugly fucking ass.
Weapon?
Gordo sneered. Swords, I said. I was sure I could beat the fucker with my awesome jiu-jitsu skills, but considering the situation and the fact I had an injured companion, I wasn't going to take any chances.
Fine,
he gritted out, as if he was disappointed with my answer. But if he thought I was going to make this easy on him in any way, the pointy-nosed shit-stain was sorely mistaken.
Let's go!
No!
A high-pitched wail suddenly tore out from behind me, and before I could turn around, a pair of wiry arms clamped around my waist.
Don't go! Please don't go!
Rylan, hey, I said, and I loosened the kid's death grip so I could crouch down in front of him. You don't have to worry. I'll be right back, okay?
You can't make that promise,
he cried, and then hugged himself as if he was already trying to get used to the fact he might not be able to ask for hugs ever again.
Yes, I can, I said, and then gripped his chin so he would look me in the face. I can and I will, because you know why?
Why?
His lower lip trembled as more fat tears rolled off his eyelashes. Because I'm looking forward to watching you clean up all that dung left behind from Ben and Jerry later, I said gravely, but then cracked a grin. This had the desired effect of causing Rylan to burst out in surprised laughter before his face crumpled again, and he bowed his head. That wouldn't do, so I reeled him in by the back of his neck and then hugged him with my hand, petting his disaster hair.
And also because I'm looking forward to being your dad, kiddo, I added. It's all new to me, but I'm excited to learn.
I can't remember what it's like to be someone's son,
he admitted in a small voice, with his arms still stiff at his sides, as if still holding back.
That's okay. We can learn together, I promised, and then I kissed the top of his head.
This seemed to be the last straw that broke the camel's back and released the floodgates the kid had desperately tried to keep at bay. Suddenly, I found myself being hugged so tightly I thought my ribs might crack.
Please, come back, so you can be my foster dad,
he whispered into my chest.
Definitely, I assured.
How touching,
Gordo sneered again, and I shot daggers at him with my eyes.
Rylan,
Zoe said as she came closer.
Come with me and help me finish the hives. While we are waiting for Alex to return, I would like to tell you about the time he rescued me. I think you will find I know exactly how you must feel.
Her compassionate ocean-blue eyes then pierced into mine, and I frowned at her in confusion.
You wanted to be with me before we even knew each other?
I asked with a no-doubt baffled expression.
Yes,
she said simply, but the adoration on her face spoke volumes and left me feeling humbled in a way I never had before.
Brightwood!
Gordo barked, seemingly at the end of his short patience. He was looking awfully sweaty again, and he even nervously tugged at the collar of his soot-colored tunic.
Are we doing this?
Hold your horses, Sally, I shot back, and then I got to my feet so I could look at all the people who had my back, at my family.
Come back to us, husband,
Zoe said with her hands on Ryland's shoulders, and I leaned in to kiss her briefly on the lips. We'll do, I said, and then ruffled Ryland's hair. Hold down the manor while I'm gone. Keep Zoe and Shay and everyone safe inside, okay?
You can count on me,
he said with his typical grave dedication as he placed a fist over his heart in salute. I mirrored the gesture and then rested my hand on the pommel of my sword so I could draw a little strength from the tiny hum of power I could feel thrumming inside the forged metal.
Alex!
Shay belted and practically leapt into my arms so she could hug me as hard as she could. I held her back just as fiercely until her feet were dangling in the air because of our height difference. Her breath was warm as she spoke in my ear, and I took further comfort in her ginger lily scent.
Listen to Horace. I can tell he knows something is not what it seems.
I will, and you don't have to worry about me. I am coming back. I set her back on the ground so I could look into her shimmering emerald eyes. And I'll bring Horace back safe, too.
I know you will,
she said as she ran her hand lovingly through my hair.
But I would also prefer you come back unscathed as well. Do be careful.
Safe, sound, and unscathed. Don't worry. I leaned down and kissed her on her petal-soft lips, and then I turned to face the music. Let's do this while we're all still young enough.
We will traverse on foot,
Gordo stated, and I rolled my eyes and gave him the universal gesture for hurry the fuck up.
Marvo, take leave with the Canterflies back to my estate and tell Velrala I will return to her shortly wielding my new fourth rank status.
Yeah, we would all just have to see about that, Dick Nozzle. Then the Vulture Man and his beefy companion, Hitler's wet dream, marched away from the front gates and sharply to the right into the dense forest that butted up against Ithaca's western border. Horace and I exchanged unimpressed looks, and with one last round of goodbyes to everyone, we took off after the odd duo. Are there any mercenary bands in these woods still? I asked my black-feathered companion, as we followed behind the other two a ways, so we could chat quietly without being overheard. The last time I was here, we had a merry run-in with your old clan leader, Gull. Feeling nostalgic? Horace teased a little, and nudged at my arm with his elbow. Oh, look, I think that's the tree where we first met. Shut up, I said with a grin, and shoved him back. Even though we were possibly on our way into a trap, the Falcon Man had just enough crazy about him to make it seem as if this was just a day in the life, not what was essentially a death march. In all seriousness, though, he said, as we walked deeper into the forest, and the light became dimmer through the thick canopy of willowy jewel-toned trees, the faction I belong to, it's been... they're all completely wiped out, so to answer your question, no, there is no one. Does this have anything to do with what you told us before you epically passed out with a hole in your side? I asked as I stepped over a rotted log, eaten to death by something that left behind signs similar to termites. To be honest, I don't remember much from that. What did I say? He moved a low-hanging branch with turquoise leaves out of the way so he wouldn't hit his feathered crest, and then he looked at me curiously. You said something about how you got out for good? And then when Zoe went to find Rufus, she said it seemed as if the mercs you were with were in the wrong place at the wrong time when the demon sun hit, I said, with both eyebrows arched expectantly. Almost as if something or someone led them right where the demons erupted out of the ground. Zoe said it was a slaughter. Horace got abruptly quiet, and he focused his gaze on the ground as if he was paying extra care to where he placed his feet. But then he seemed to come to a conclusion based on the way he nodded and then firmed his jaw in resolve. By now, Shay has probably mentioned how joining the clans was more out of necessity for me instead of our true career choice, he started bitterly as we trudged through the leaves and mud. She might have mentioned a thing or two about how you and your father didn't see eye to eye, but I think she wanted you to be the one to divulge the details, I said, and then startled slightly at the eerie sound of some animal being wounded somewhere far off. But maybe an abridged version in a place like this. I agree, just the facts, he said, as his gold-green eyes darted around the forest looking for any signs of danger.
Fact number one. I am an alchemical metallurgist, and because of this, I was sent to study the ancient ways at this secret academy on Alam Isle. Fact number two. All alchemists are bound by secrecy and are forbidden to use their magic solely for personal gain. But despite this, my father wanted me to go against the sacred ways and try to forge him weaponry the likes of which had never been forged before. I refused, and therefore he disowned me, to live without status or legacy.
Wow. Your dad sounds like a piece of work, I said, and in that moment I didn't know what seemed worse, being an orphan or being stuck with hateful parents.
Yes, and this is the watered-down version. Remember that, Horace muttered with the darkest scowl I'd ever seen, and his eyes became hollow with bad memories. Which brings me to fact number three. I needed to fall in with a crowd that would accept me or starve. But being an outsider, and a pompous Asher's son as well, it wasn't easy to convince the mercenaries to take me in. In fact, it wasn't until I revealed the true power of my metallurgy when they offered me a place among their ranks. Although I wasn't truly equal to them, a fact that took me a long while to see the truth of. You see, I was still the disowned whelp of the very people whom they hate. Over time, I realized I was more of a pet, only let out of my cage if I could either entertain them, forge them weapons, or hunt for them. Ahead of us, our two less-than-friendly death-duel hiking guides stopped in a clearing so they could argue about something. They were still a few dozen paces in front of us, so I couldn't make out what they were saying, but Gordo held something that looked like a shiny new quarter up to the sun in order to examine it. "What do you mean when you say you had to hunt for them?" I asked, and the laden way he said the word hunt caused a frisson of unease to build up inside me. "There is a very special trait that all metallurgists share," Horace said, as he casually armed himself with a large, hooked hunting knife from a concealed sheath at the small of his back. "It is the ability to sense the core of a herald demon even after it has been forged into a weapon. There is some historical lore detailing the purpose and origins of the first metallurgists, but I won't bore you with a lecture. Basically, this was my bargaining card with the clans. They agreed to feed me and clothe me while I was sent to sniff out where any potential unguarded herald weapons were located for them to steal. For a while, it was good. Stealing from the very rich and giving back to the disenfranchised made me feel like a vigilante. But then, when the red moon came and kept coming hence, I was forced to hunt real herald demons regardless of the cost to me or my fellow clanmates. So every time there was a demon eruption, you had to go find the biggest mamajama so your clan leader could harvest its core," I clarified, as I still kept one eye on the bald man and his giant frosted flake as they continued to bicker over the small shiny thing in Gordo's bony hand. "It was after one of my closest allies was ripped apart by one such demon in which I told my leader I would no longer lead him to the heralds," Horace continued. "You can imagine he didn't like that. And unfortunately, Rufus got tangled up in the mess because he was with me at the time. So you have to understand, I was desperate, Alex, or I never would have done something so lacking in honor." I frowned lightly as I saw the Falcon Man's eyes flash that liquid gold color I recognized from when he worked his metallurgical magic on my own herald blade. "What did you do, Horace?" I asked in a hushed tone. "I led them directly to a herald demon with a violet core," he said, with a haunted expression on his face. "Violet means the most powerful of all the cores, right?" I asked, as I tried to remember the details Horace shared with me when he was melding my weapon with the sapphire blue gem of Shay's headpiece. From what I recalled, the color of the herald gem varied and matched up with the spectrum, with red being the most common core and purple being the rarest. "Those demons who possess a violet core are considered ancient demon generals from the first demon tide," the Falcon Man said, and we both hung back as the other two men in front of us escalated their bickering. "They are a terrible force of nature, and even now, I still don't know how I managed to survive when I led my clan leaders to the place where they were to spawn a moment later." "But doesn't there need to be a red sun for the demons to appear?" I asked, and glanced warily at the blue sky. "Forgive me for not keeping up with the class, but how did you know where the demon general was going to appear before the demon sun?" "This is what I've been trying to tell you, Alex," he said, and his eyes flashed gold again. "In some rare cases, there are alchemists like me who can sense the scourge before it happens. I think Gutter is the same, and—" Then the Falcon Man's eyes suddenly flashed so brightly, his pupils were consumed by the eerie glow, and he suddenly stumbled and hunched over, as if an unstoppable force gripped him in its clutches. "Horace!" I shouted, and steadied my swaying companion, just as Gordo cried in alarm when his second, Gutter, suddenly took off into the trees and abandoned us all.
"Scourge!"
Horace gasped out, and his golden-eyed expression seemed to be one of pain.
"Trap!"
And then that dreaded howl ripped open the sky as the earth nearly exploded under our feet.